It's time to awaken to your ultimate potential.
It's exciting to be joining you on our third season of the Live Greatly podcast. In case you're new to the show, I'm Crystal Bauer, a wellness expert on a mission to help you thrive personally and professionally. If you're ready to thrive, I invite you to subscribe and follow season three, because each week I'm sharing conversations with incredible individuals about life, wellness, and success. Welcome to the Live Greatly podcast.
It's self-permission. That's the number one thing. I find that so many students and executives that I work with, they're still waiting for someone else to come in and anoint them and go, okay, you can be a change maker now. And of course, that doesn't happen. Rather, it's something we need to give to ourselves.
I'm incredibly excited to have Alex Budak here today to talk about becoming a change maker. It doesn't matter what your role is, what your position is, what your title is, you have the power to make a powerful, positive impact. Alex Budak is a social entrepreneur, a faculty member at Berkeley, and also the author of Becoming a Changemaker. Alex and I are going to be chatting about what the first steps are to start positive change, how you can make a difference, and so much more. I'm really excited about this episode. Let's go ahead and welcome Alex to the show. Alex, so excited to have you here. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, Crystal, thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. So you have a book that, a new book that is going to be coming out the day that this episode airs, which is really exciting. So I would love to hear about what you wrote the book about and a little bit of the backstory about why you decided to write this book and what you're currently up to.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's a dream come true to be putting this book out into the world. It's called Becoming a Changemaker, and it's an actionable, inclusive guide to leading positive change at any level. It's for the person who's always wanted to be part of change, wanted to lead change, but just felt stuck for whatever reason. And it's a guide to help people get unstuck and find the sense of purpose and find some of those crucial steps for going from, okay, I've got this idea for change, how do I get started, to taking those steps, how to engage others in the change process with you, and a bit of the mindset to help you continue on, because as you fully know, change is hard. And so how do you keep going, even when change is tough, to pursue those aspirations you have?
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So how did you go down this path? Like, why was this something that you felt drawn to and enough to, you're teaching a course at Berkeley, right? About this. Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah. And then writing this book. So like, where did this stem from? Do you have a story or like anything in your past that really stands out that made this really important to you?
Yeah. It's one of those things when sort of like Steve Jobs' commencement address at Stanford, it's like when you look back and connect the dots, it gets really clear. And so everything I've done for my whole professional career is really helping people from all walks of life become change makers. And so for me, it started, I was living in Ahmedabad, India for a little bit. And while I was there, I was doing some work with a community group that worked with girls in the community and used sport as a tool to teach healthy habits and leadership, among other things. And I had this sort of realization there, which is that there's change makers literally all around the world, but just too many barriers getting in the way of people taking action. And that was the light bulb moment for me, the kind of moment that oriented the rest of my professional career. So I've worn a few hats along the way. I've been a social entrepreneur. So I co-founded a social venture called Start Some Good with the goal of tearing down those barriers that get in the way of people starting to lead change. Mm-hmm. I lived in Stockholm, Sweden for a bit, where I helped entrepreneurs get their ideas and companies off the ground. And then very fortuitously found myself at UC Berkeley. And I distinctly remember the conversation that I had. This was with the senior assistant dean of instruction. So sort of the person who oversees all the faculty, all the curriculum, super important person. And so I went into him with this sort of career transition question. But I think about 10 minutes in, he could tell that my heart wasn't really in it. And so he went, Alex, what do you really want to do? I'm like, well, what I really want to do is teach. And then I probably made some excuses for why I couldn't teach or whatever. And then he interrupted me and said, Alex, what do you want to teach? I said, well, I want to teach this class, Becoming a Changemaker. Like in that moment, got crystal clear for me. And to my surprise, I said, okay, put together a syllabus and show me and let's go from there. And so that began my sort of teaching journey. That was back in 2018. And then in 2019, I created this class called Becoming a Changemaker at Berkeley. And lots of the lessons and insights and stories and even some of the exercises from the book are all based off of the class.
So cool. Okay. So what does it mean to be a changemaker? I mean, I have my own idea of what it means maybe to me, but I'm curious what it means to you. What do you think?
Can I hear your thoughts on change making? Because I should say there's not one single definition, right? We're kind of building this field as we go. I've got my thoughts, but what does change making mean to you?
It means to me having the courage to do something different and to something that you personally believe in, to kind of lead the way in a new way of doing things or a new way of looking at things. So that's what just popped into my head. I might rethink that answer later, but for right now, that's what I'm going with.
I wouldn't rethink it too much. I think that's a pretty good answer. You get into a bit of the how as well. So as I think about the definition of it, my definition is radically inclusive. I think we have so many identities that are inherently exclusive. So we think, well, either I'm an entrepreneur or I'm not. I'm an artist or I'm not. I'm a podcaster or I'm not. But I like the idea of thinking about change-making as an identity we layer onto all of our other identities. So to me, the definition is pretty simple. It's simply someone who leads positive change from where they are. And the from where they are piece is crucial to me because we often think that we need to be in a traditional position of power, whether CEO, executive director, vice president. But I want to make the case and the stories in the book show that we can lead change at any level in a way that's true to who we are. And then building off of your definition, well, then I've sort of identified changemaker, mindset traits, changemaker, leadership, which are the key ways people lead change. And I think you've identified a couple of key ones there in your definition.
Amazing. So what do you think is the first step to being a change maker? Like, what would you say? Or I'm curious, maybe in your syllabus, you go through this, like, where do you start?
It's self-permission. That's the number one thing. I find that so many students and executives that I work with, they're still waiting for someone else to come in and anoint them and go, okay, you can be a change maker now. And of course that doesn't happen. Rather, it's something we need to give to ourselves. So of course, this field of change making could feel a little bit fuzzy, but I'm in academia. So I've launched the first ever longitudinal study of change makers to try to understand how do individuals develop as change makers over time. And so we crunch the data. And one of the things that becomes clear is one of the most important factors for being a successful change maker is developing what I call a sense of agency. So that's the idea that, you know, if you look around the world today, there are so many challenges, so many problems that we need people like us to step up and address. But change makers have the sense of agency to say, hey, where others see a problem, I see an opportunity, or, you know, I don't know exactly how to solve this quite yet, but I know that I can do something about this. It's that self-permission piece that says, you know, the future can be better than it is today, and I can play a role in making sure that it is.
Right. And I think one thing that can hold people back sometimes is feeling overwhelmed or thinking about like, wow, this is such a big problem. How can I really make a significant impact, or how, you know, how can I even get started? And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. I'm thinking back to another episode I had Joel Satori on, and he works for National Geographic, and he's doing this project called the Photo Arc. And I asked him kind of a similar question about what, you know, the wildlife conservation and this big problem that people that we're facing as human beings in our planet. And his answer was start in your own backyard. I'm curious what your thoughts are on how people can avoid that overwhelm and get started.
I'm happy you brought up that episode. I think your conversation with Joel is one of my favorite episodes of yours that I've listened to. And if I remember correctly, I think he's doing a 25-year project, right? So he's like really committing to the long term on this. So this feeling of overwhelm is something I hear all the time from the people that I work with. And if you look at, let's say, climate change, for instance, it feels like this really important problem that we need to address. But how could any of us individually make any kind of dent on this huge challenge that's facing the entire planet? So a couple of things that I found have been helpful. The first is that I think we tend to over-glorify the lone person, the lone innovator, the lone change maker. We put them up on a pedestal and go like, oh, look at this person, whether that's Musk or Jobs or Nelson Mandela, whomever, like something like that. We go like, oh, I can never attain that. Like, I'm not that person. But I think instead there's an approach I like, which is called network-based leadership. The idea of network-based leadership is that you're not trying to do it all yourself. You're trying to understand, what are the networks? Who are the other people that are working on this? Mm. And how can I plug into that in a meaningful way? And when we think more collaboratively rather than competitively, a lot of opportunities open up. So maybe you get inspiration. You see, well, someone's doing something really cool for climate action in Uganda, and my context is different, but maybe I could take a bit of inspiration from their model. Or maybe you say, look, there's someone else in my backyard that's working on this aspect of climate change, but maybe I could come in on a different level and support there. If we try to do it all ourselves, we'll inevitably get frustrated. But if you can start seeing yourself as part of a larger whole, this amazing community of change makers, that's where it can start feeling a little bit less overwhelming. And you also have that amazing support, which can only come from a community of other change makers working alongside you.
I love that. And I think having that connection with other people and then organizations that are already in place, that can take the pressure off a little bit initially if someone's listening and they don't know where to get started. It's like, just do a little bit of research. Like you said, who's already doing some of these things. I love that idea. So I'm wondering, what do you think is necessary when it comes to having the right mindset to really make a significant change? Because you know, there is overwhelm that can be involved in this. There could be some fear of failure, of stepping out of your comfort zone, you know, all of those things. So wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Oh, all those things. Yeah. So the way I teach Changemaker Mindset in the book is that it's a whole new way of sort of seeing the world around you and your role in shaping it. And, you know, I'm so glad you talked about failure and rejection, because that is a crucial aspect of a changemaker mindset. But it's one thing to sort of intellectually understand that, to say like, okay, look, if I'm going to lead change, I'm probably going to get rejected along the way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, put in whatever change effort that is, you know, I'm just finished a book. And so, as you can imagine, a book comes with a lot of rejection along the way. So fill in whatever your level of change is. But in my class, we spend 1 week, which is all focused on learning about how we can fail forward. And so we look at some empirical data, we do some case studies, we watch a couple of inspiring videos. But then towards the end of class, I put up a slide which just has two words: go fail. And my students sort of look at me and they start like giggling, like, is he for real? Like, what's going on here? And I'm like, yeah, I'm serious. I put on the next slide and I give them the instructions. They have 15 minutes to go leave the classroom, and they can't come back until they've asked for something and been rejected. And of course, there's only two rules. So the two rules are: one, nothing illegal or inappropriate. Sure. And secondly, they can't tell someone it's for a class until afterwards. So they've got to go out there. And it's amazing. It's a, you know, privilege to be at the front of the room, not inside in the students' seats. But they start like nervously laughing and like sweating. And like, they tell me their hearts are beating fast. Like, they're nervous about this. And these are high achieving students who have accomplished a lot at a young age, but still failure is completely terrifying to most of us. Mm-hmm. And so what I try to do with this assignment is to make failure feel less scary and less painful. So students go leave the classroom, and I tell them, of course, I'll be at the front of the class. If you need a little coaching, a little mentorship, like, I'll help you kind of figure out what to do. But they go out and they come back 15 minutes later, and the energy is just off the charts. Like, they're just bouncing off of the walls, so much so that I had a professor next door come over and ask us to keep it down, because the energy was just so crazy once students got back. Because there's two things that they learn. The first is that about one third of the time, students ask for something and they're sure that they'll get rejected and actually get a yes. I think about the woman who went to the cafe and asked for a free orange juice, and she got it. And she's like, oh, I thought I wasn't going to get one. I need to ask for another one. So she asked for a second one, and she got it. And then she asked for a third orange juice. They're like, no, you can't have three orange juice. And she came back with orange juice for all of us. Or the student who walked into the student gym and just announced on the microphone, hey, it's not my birthday, but I would love it if you would all sing happy birthday to me. Would you do that? And she got about 50 people at the gym to sing her happy birthday. Just crazy costs, but people are willing to do it. And then the other two thirds, they find, well, okay, failure isn't fatal. It's not as painful. Like, no one laughed at me. Like, I recovered from it. Like, it's okay. And so I hope that this experiment of trying to fail on purpose can start changing that mindset, to move from intellectually understanding, okay, I'm going to have to fail, to instead being like, failure is an inevitable part of the change process. And the sooner you get comfortable with it, the sooner you'll be a more effective change maker.
Right. I love that. And it, you know, it really helps build resilience too, because if you're trying to start something new or you're trying to be a change maker, you need to have resiliency. Because as you said, you're going to hear no, you're going to have setbacks. And in order to keep going, you have to be able to bounce back. So in addition to like this exercise, right, where people are in a playful way, getting comfortable with hearing no, anything else you think that can help build that muscle of resiliency for people?
Well, the second thing is just finding your, call it your purpose, call it your passion, call it your mission. If I were writing a book on, I don't know, accounting principles, I'd probably give up after the first rejection, because at that point, I'd be like, you know, I don't care about accounting anyway. Like, who am I to write this book? That's fine. You're right. I shouldn't do this. When you deeply care about something, whatever that initiative is, in my case, you know, this book, like wanting to bring this book into the world, when you deeply care about something enough, you're willing to, you know, I put in quotation marks, suffer that failure, because you have a greater why behind it. And so it's not automatic to find that why, not automatic to find that purpose. In some ways, it's a privilege to find that. But when you can really find that and you can anchor in on that, I think that's what keeps you going in the really hard times. If there's a change effort you deeply care about, whether that's climate justice, racial justice, digital transformation, whatever it is, if you can feel really anchored to that, that will help you keep going despite and in face of the inevitable no's.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk a little bit about getting comfortable with standing out or not doing the same thing that everybody else is doing. And I think that can be really intimidating for some people to choose to go a different path or to start a new way or to think for themselves instead of just the group mentality. And I'm wondering if you have any insights or tips that can help people start to look at things in a new way. I think sometimes we're taught in school, and maybe it's different now, but I know when I went to school, it was kind of like what you said, you need like permission to do certain things, or you check this box and then you check that box and then you get this job and then you do this and you do that. And it's all in these like little boxes of this is what you need to do. This is how you need to think about this. And I think that more different types of thinking and creative thinking is being taught more these days. But I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for people to start having these creative ideas.
Yeah, it's so important. And I agree with you. I think oftentimes school forces us into boxes rather than really appreciating the what we call divergent thinking. That's so important, sort of brainstorming new possibilities. In the book, I tell the story of an amazing engineer named Lila Olgren. We've probably never heard of Lila, but we have all absolutely used the impact of her work. So this is back in the 1970s, and she's working for the Swedish Telecommunications Agency. And they're trying to figure out how to make the first mobile phone work. At this point, it was a car phone. So they're trying to figure out how they could make sure that you dial the numbers on the phone and then it would connect and dial the call. And they kept running into the same issue over and over, which is that they were trying to replicate the same process on a mobile phone that we experienced in our home phones on a landline. So in other words, you press a number and it sends it to the tower, and then you go until you have 7 numbers or 10 numbers or however many. Mm-hmm. But that, of course, didn't work in a car because you're moving quickly. There's trees, there's tunnels, and the calls kept dropping off because you could never get those numbers dialed in time. And they were reaching the point where they were wondering, like, I wonder if we'll ever be able to make this happen. Like, maybe it's just not possible to do a car phone. But Lila thought differently, and also impressive. She's, of course, the only woman on an all-male team. But she saw things differently. And she said, well, why do we have to do the exact same process of a home phone when we're in a car? Could we think differently about this? And at this point, the processing power of a circuit was just starting to be powerful enough that they could store numbers as you went. So instead of sending one number at a time where the call would get interrupted, instead you would store up the 7 or 10 numbers. Once you had all of them, you'd boom, send it to the tower. And that's what unlocked our ability to make mobile phone calls. So now even 50 years later, a lot of the gratitude is due to Lila Olgren and her ability to see things a little bit differently. So how can we embrace that sort of mindset that Lila had? I mean, I think a lot of it begins with curiosity. And I fully agree with you that in schools, when we're taught to do standardized tests or regurgitate information, it kills a lot of our curiosity. We were talking before the podcast that both of us have kids. I think kids have this wonderful natural curiosity. Mine is 20 months old, so he's a little too young to be asking this. But in the design thinking sort of playbook, they say, you know, think like a 3-year-old. Think 3-year-olds, maybe you'll know better. But 3-year-olds, they seem to have a lot of wonder, love to ask the question, why? And I think we should tap into that natural why a little bit. Just like Lila sort of saying, well, why are we trying to do this exactly the same way as before? What if? Can we imagine this? And I think the more we can sort of channel our inner 3-year-old, I think that can open up a lot of new avenues we may not be willing to think about in our kind of traditional grown-up business sense.
Yeah, no, totally agree with that. And just not always assuming that the answers we've been given are the way things need to be. So there's like so many different ways a problem can be approached, so many different perspectives when you're looking at one situation. So I think it's just not taking the way things are and saying, okay, well, that's the way things need to be or should continue to be, having kind of that open curiosity. I love that.
Yeah.
So wondering what you are doing these days for self-care. So you are teaching a course, you have a baby, a little one at home, and you've got this book. Do you have any things that you do regularly to help yourself stay grounded throughout all this?
It's so important because I think I learned the lesson the hard way. In my previous job as a social entrepreneur, honestly, I got burned out. I was working 80, 90, 100-hour weeks.
Wow.
And just working every waking minute. And it got to the point where I had to leave the organization because I just got so burned out. I could no longer see the forest for the trees. I wasn't taking care of myself and it just wasn't sustainable. So I learned the hard way how important self-care is. And I think there's a tendency, especially among hard driving change makers, to sort of see it as this luxury that it's like, oh, well, I'll do that when I have a chance. Or like, if I have a few minutes, mm-hmm. I'll do it. But that perspective really changed me, that it is so important we take care of ourselves because change is not a sprint. It's a marathon. We've got to be in it for the long haul. So for me, things that work out really well is one, physical exercise that tends to be like the catalyst for a really good day is like a hard workout. But also solo walks. As a parent, it's all too rare to get any time to yourself, of course, but trying to take just short walks during the day where it's just me, usually not even listening to music or a podcast, just sort of wandering with my thoughts. I find that to be really helpful. There's other things that I try, but I think we should also be honest as change makers. You know, I've tried many times to get into a meditation routine and it just hasn't stuck for me, at least yet. But I found at least a couple of practices. I think more than anything, it's like making sure you know that it's not selfish to take care of yourself, that it's actually crucial and it helps you better serve your communities and better serve your change efforts.
Right, right. And especially I think when people have these the big problems that they're trying to address, it feels it, and it is, you know, there's a sense of urgency to it, but it's recognizing that in order to be able to show up and address those things, you have to take care of yourself and you have to make sure that you're taking time during the day and not overdoing it. And what you were saying that you tried a meditation practice, you know, I think sometimes what I've noticed is when people are really active and they have a lot of different projects that they're working on that I'm speaking from personal experience too. If I have a lot going on that I'm working towards, walking meditation helps, or moving meditation is more effective for me than sitting and trying to just meditate, which I've done that practice in the past. But recently I've really enjoyed kind of what you said, like the solo walks where I'm just walking without my phone and I'm just trying to like take in what's going on, you know, look at the birds, hear the sounds, look at the flowers, just relax. And that is kind of my meditative practice currently.
Thank you. Yeah. You inspired me. I'm going to try that for my next walk, is to try a bit of a meditative walk.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are coming close to the end here. Anything else you'd like to share about your book? Where can people find it? And anything else before we do a kind of fun wellness lightning round at the end?
Oh, love it. Yeah. So it's available at all major bookstores, Amazon, et cetera. You can also check out changemakerbook.com for a few other resources that I've put together for ways that you can take the Changemaker Index, understand what your changemaker strengths are, and also a tool called the Changemaker Canvas, which helps you break down change into small, meaningful, actionable steps. So awesome. Hope that those resources are helpful, and I can't wait to see what change you lead as a result.
Amazing. And I will put a link to your book and all that good stuff in the episode details. So you listening can just go ahead and click that and check out that book. Awesome. Well, let's jump into the wellness lightning round. So the first question I have for you is there a habit right now that you're trying to break free of? And is there a healthy habit that you're trying to create for yourself?
I'm trying to go to sleep a little bit earlier than I have been. As you can imagine, in writing the book and publicizing the book, my sleep has slipped a little bit later and later and later. So I'm trying to get to sleep before midnight is the goal right now.
Got it. Okay. And then, I guess those go hand in hand, right? You're trying to break out of one habit and create a healthier habit. It's perfect. Yeah. And then last question for you is, knowing what you know today, what advice would you have given to yourself from 10 years ago?
So 10 years ago, so I would have been sort of on the middle of my social entrepreneurship journey. So I think it goes back to exactly that question you asked me before, which is I felt all this pressure, this would be at age 28, to be like, I had to change the world right that year, or like the next 5 months. If I don't do this well, then I won't change the world. And so I think I tell myself to just take a little bit of the pressure off and think about it and change on the long-term horizon. That of course, what you do in a given week or month matters, but to try to zoom out and be like, Alex, you're going to be working on this for 40, 50 years. Like, make sure you take care of yourself and take the time. I really like the words of Matthew Kelly from The Long View. He says, we tend to overestimate what we can do in a day, underestimate what we can do in a month, overestimate what we can do in a year, and underestimate what we can do in a decade. And so I think I would tell myself to have that longer term perspective.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Well, this has been awesome, Alex. Thank you so much for taking time with me today. I really appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you, Crystal.
Thank you so much for spending time with me today. I absolutely loved sharing these insights with you. If you have a moment, I would greatly appreciate you leaving a review about what you loved about this episode. Leaving reviews helps this show gain visibility so those who can benefit from it can gain access to it. Thank you so much for your support. And until next time, this is Crystal Bauer with Live Greatly, inspiring you to awaken your ultimate potential. Now for a disclaimer. The contents of this podcast are intended for informational and educational purposes only. Always seek the guidance of your physician or qualified health professional for any recommendations specific to you or for any questions regarding your specific health, your sleep patterns, changes to diet and exercise, or any medical conditions. Always consult your physician before taking any medications, any over-the-counter drugs, any supplements, vitamins, or herbs, and consult your physician before starting any new lifestyle programs. All information, views, and statements shared on the Live Greatly podcast are purely the opinions of the authors. They are not medical advice or treatment recommendations. They have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Opinions of guests are their own, and Crystal Bauer and this podcast do not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. Neither Crystal Bauer nor this podcast takes any responsibility for possible health consequences of a person or persons following the information in this educational content. Always consult your physician for recommendations specific to you. If any product mentioned in this podcast has been received from the manufacturer or public relations team for that product with the express intent of editorial consideration, the product will be identified as such. A product for which Live Greatly receives some form of compensation for promoting will be identified as such.